Dr. Grace Douglas has been patiently waiting, wondering what is all this about, because of course she didn't know that this is Pledge Drive at the radio station. Dr. Douglas is a project scientist with the Advanced Food Technology Project, and that is a function of NASA, as they're studying foods that they can use, optimizing foods for people who are living and working in extreme conditions. And I think that's what we do here, isn't it, Bob? Extreme conditions. At any rate, I want to welcome Dr. Grace Douglas to the Roadhouse.
Thank you very much.
Great of you to be on tonight. Are you now? You're working essentially for NASA, I assume. Does that mean that you're down in Houston, or where are we talking to you?
Yes, we're at the Houston, at the Johnson Space Center in Houston, Texas.
Oh, that's great. That's got to be an exciting place to work.
Yes, very much.
Now, you just had a huge conference down in New Orleans with people from all facets of the industry, the food industry, especially the technology that they're looking at to develop new things. Do you get a lot of great ideas when you go to those types of conferences, or are they mainly to mingle with other folks doing the same type of work?
Oh, yes. They actually serve several purposes. One is to engage with other food scientists, and we can work on research collaborations that way. One is to discover the new research that other scientists are working on and whether we can utilize that work in our work at the Johnson Space Center. And then also, with all the ingredient suppliers coming with all of their new products every year, we can look at their new products and see if we can use any of those in our foods here for space.
Now, as I understand it, one of the goals at NASA is to get a crew on a mission to Mars. And to do that, how long a period of time and how big a crew would be involved in a mission like that?
So they're looking at sending a crew hopefully in the 2030s on a Mars mission, and they're looking at sending 6 people. And the mission itself would be about 2.5 years in length. And the way that mission would work is that you have to wait until Mars and Earth align, because they're evolving around the sun on different they're in different evolutions around the sun. And so when they align, we could send a crew, and it would take about 6 months for them to get to the surface of Mars. And then Earth and Mars will get further and further apart during that time. And then about 2 years later, they would spend about 2 years on the surface of Mars, and 2 years later, Mars and Earth would align again, and you could bring them back. So we would need to be able to develop a food system that could support them during this time where they will not have the possibility of a resupply mission.
That sounds like an amazing, a task that's too much for my brain to comprehend. That long a period of time away and that much food, when you think of 6 people and how much I know I eat in a day, it would add up to a lot of weight. I imagine you've figured out just how much weight the foods that you have developed so far would take to make that mission possible.
Yes, we have, and it is quite a lot. It's over 10,000 kilograms.
Which is what, 22,000 pounds or something?
Yes, about that. So it's more than that.
More than that, yeah. That's amazing amount of weight to add to the propulsion. Could that be done?
Absolutely. And so that's actually one of our challenges. We're looking at possibly needing up to a 5-year shelf life for our food for that reason. They would not likely launch the food with the crew. They would launch it on a supply vehicle that the crew would rendezvous with once they are launched from Earth. And so that could possibly happen in low Earth orbit. It could possibly happen out in space. It could possibly happen that the food gets sent ahead of the crew. And so by the time you would make and package and store and stow and launch those foods, it will take time just to do that for that size of a mission, because you have to launch a wide variety of foods and they have to be packaged specifically for space flight. So we're looking at a food system that could be 5 years old, and that's there are a lot of challenges in making sure that the food remains nutritious and safe, and also that they want to eat it over that time, that it's acceptable and there's enough variety.
Can you give us an idea just what kinds of food we're talking about, or what level of technology you've reached so far as far as what foods they might be bringing?
So right now on the International Space Station, we're currently feeding 3 crew members, and they have 6-month missions, and the foods are all shelf stable. We don't have refrigerators and freezers, so all of our foods are thermostabilized, freeze-dried, irradiated, or they're low moisture, and they're all individually packaged in per serving, so that the crew can they can heat them up and eat them, or they can just add water and eat them, and they don't have to worry about the fact that they don't have refrigeration and they can't transfer food in space. And so thermostabilization, we use retorts. It's similar to canned food, but they're in pouches. So we use pouches. They're lightweight. They're flexible. It's easier to stow and launch the lighter weight flexible pouches. But they're just like canned foods, except we make them here at NASA to fulfill the nutritional requirements of the astronauts. And we have about 60 different thermostabilized foods, and they are very similar to what you would get when you open canned food in a grocery store, except a little bit of higher quality because the pouches actually enable us to provide a slightly higher quality. So they're similar to MREs that you get in the military. They're just very different nutrition and things like that.
Just working on the packaging is a challenge in itself, especially if it's going to last that long a period of time.
Yes, and so we do use the packaging that the military uses for the thermostabilized foods, and then we use commercially available packaging that's very high barrier to moisture and oxygen for our freeze-dried foods and for our beverages. And the part of that packaging that creates that barrier to the moisture and the oxygen is there's an aluminum layer in it. So it is, This packaging has become commercially available. We do use high barrier. So the aluminum layer is similar when you get a tuna fish package in the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
So there are similar packages to those that have become commercially available over the past 20, 30 years. And that was driven by the military. So I think that we are always looking for better packaging. And it honestly, the best place to get it is from the commercial food industry. They're always developing new and better packaging. And we're at NASA, we're actually a very small group because we're only feeding 3 people in space at a time. So we are always looking for the commercial advances in packaging to try and improve that.
Mm-hmm. Now, this food that we're talking about, would I recognize this as food? It might sound like a silly question, but as things become more a part of our technology and dried, and would the people who are eating it recognize it as food they're used to eating?
Absolutely. We try very hard to provide food that's incredibly familiar to our crew, and they do get some items from the grocery store as well, like granola bars and nuts and things like that, that we can repackage for flight. But even the freeze-dried foods, because it's just food that we use normal ingredients just like a mm-hmm. food company would use, and we make a food like a macaroni and cheese or a spaghetti with meat sauce, and then we freeze it and freeze-dry it, and then we package it, and it's very lightweight at that point, so it's easy to launch. It's in a flexible package, and in space, they add water, and they can add hot water or ambient temperature water, and it rehydrates to be very, very much like the food that it started out as.
Sounds like Mountain House that I take when I'm going climbing.
There are some, it's the same process.
Uh-huh.
So the foods are a little bit different because ours are made to the requirements of our crew on orbit. There's a lot less sodium, probably a lower content of fat, and we have to vacuum package all of our foods as well to remove the air and give them a long shelf life.
Can you talk a little bit about, I don't know if we still would call them astronauts, can we still refer to these people as astronauts?
Yes.
At any rate, what kind of things are they still going through the same processes physically as they did early in the space industry where, maybe there was worries about their bone density and worries about losing weight and losing their fitness? Have those issues been pretty well resolved?
So they've made great advances in that area, and they have a lot of crew coming back now that maintain their bone mass and their muscle mass for 6 months. So, and a lot of that is because they have improved the exercise, so they have resistive exercise equipment on the International Space Station that has done a very good job of maintaining their bone mass. They exercise for about an hour to an hour and a half every day, each crew member. And then they also have very good nutrition on the International Space Station for these six-month missions. We have figured out about the variety of food that we need to send. They have a wide variety of food. They have about 200 standard menu items, and then they have some supplementation of other foods from the grocery store that might meet our requirements that the crew personally choose to supplement that. And so when they're eating well and they're eating their caloric requirements and they're exercising using these resistance equipment, their bone maintenance and their muscle maintenance is very much improved.
Well, you talked about depending somewhat on the commercial industry to develop the packaging and some of the foods that you're using. As I recall, it seems like a lot of advances have come out of the space industry that we see in the commercial segment later. Would this be true of some of the foods that you're working with now?
What would have come out of the space industry would have been processes. So the HACCP process, hazard analysis critical control point, that is used widely by the food industry today, it's a safety process, and that was co-developed by NASA and the military in Pillsbury. And so that did come out of it. But as far as developments that are used commercially, a lot of the things that we do at NASA as far as the food, it's more a microgravity restriction. So, you know, the way that we have to rehydrate foods through a septum, things like that. And that's not something that would be as interesting to the commercial food industry. So okay. It's more of a support for space flight itself.
Sure. I just remember where Tang seemed to come from that early on, and other
yes.
items that we see as part of our everyday life seem to be developed from that. You know, we got mosquitoes running around here in our studio. Maybe we can work on that next. Don't get any in that spaceship.
There's still a lot of technologies that come out of NASA that are used commercially to this day. So you just never know where they're going to come from.
Sure.
And that's always something that's, you know, a potential.
It comes kind of as a side product and not original intent.
Right.
Yes. How far along do you feel you are now to an end result of being able to feed a six-person crew for a three-year mission? This is in the 2030s. We got some time, but do you feel that you wouldn't be far away from doing it now?
So it depends on several factors. One of them is the vehicle, like we just spoke about launch mass and requirements for power and crew time and things like that. So we're looking at having this mission with no refrigerators and freezers, and so immediately you have to have a food system where your nutrition is stabilized and it will remain acceptable for this amount of time, because they won't have the option of getting their nutrition anywhere else. We have to make sure that every nutrient that's critical is maintained in that food. And so without refrigerators and freezers, we have to do quite a bit of research to make sure that we figure out the best way to stabilize that nutrition and also the acceptability of the product that they're going to want to eat it at the end of 5 years. It has been shown that if food's not acceptable, crew won't eat it at the level that will make them a top-performing crew. They'll eat enough. They'll eat enough to continue to survive, but they won't eat enough to be at their top performance, to maintain their bone mass, to maintain their muscle mass, unless they're really enjoying it. So that's all. The nutrition and acceptability is very important. So we're looking at some new technologies for processing food, such as commercial microwave or high-pressure processing, that could potentially improve the initial quality of the food. And if we can have packaging that maintains that over time, that could be a benefit. We're looking at different fortification technologies. And also we're looking at, you know, what we can be bought by having refrigerators and freezers. We still won't likely have cooking or food processing at these early stages of missions. It will still have to be a safe and shelf-stable food system. But so we do have quite a bit of research depending on the vehicle requirements and what the vehicle can offer to us.
Well, it sounds like you got your work cut out for you yet. We've been speaking with Dr. Grace Douglas, and Dr. Douglas is a project scientist down at NASA for advanced food technology. She's working on pizza and beer that you can pour water into, I think, Bob. That would keep all of those guys up there happy, I think.
Yeah, not pizza and beer. Sorry.
And that's not going to work. Well, we could just only hope. Dr. Douglas, I want to thank you so much for giving us your time tonight. And it sounds like a fascinating job to have. And I'm sure that you're going to resolve all those things before we send them up.